This is Sea Change Radio, covering the shift to sustainability. I'm Alex Wise.
I think our rhetoric would be much healthier if we dropped the whole idea of America being a special place, because we're not that different from other democracies. And we'd know this if we paid attention to other democracies, but, you know, Americans typically don't.
If you've happened to tune into MSNBC or CNN on a day when a massive hurricane is not pummeling a coastal region, you might think that the only major news in this country concerns the many legal issues facing a certain former president of the United States. But according to this week's guest on Sea Change Radio, John Storr, there are plenty of other pressing political issues worth analyzing. First, we examine the recent mass shooting in Jacksonville, Florida, including what it tells us about the white supremacy movement and how the right wing actually benefits politically from these events. Then we discuss whether the reversal of Roe v. Wade has placated Republicans or if it has just paved the way for restricting other basic freedoms like contraception. And yes, we still managed to sneak in a few minutes to talk about the upcoming trials of the 45th president. I'm joined now on Sea Change Radio by John Storr. He is the founder of the Editorial Board. People should go to editorialboard.com to check it out. John, welcome back to Sea Change Radio.
Thanks for having me again, Alex.
Always a pleasure to talk to you, my friend. So first, I feel like we should probably give the latest mass shooting its due. The Jacksonville massacre was ugly, as they all are, but the politics of this one were unavoidable because it happened right in the state where Ron DeSantis is running for president, and it had race and guns and pretty much all the terrible stuff that we're faced with the candidacy of a DeSantis. So anybody who hasn't been following it, give us a little summary of it and your analysis if you can.
Sure. Well, on August 26th, a 21-year-old white supremacist entered a dollar store in Jacksonville, Florida, and he shot three black people to death before shooting himself to death. He was armed with a semi-automatic rifle, an AR-15, and a semi-automatic pistol, a Glock, that he had purchased legally. Even though he was involved in a domestic violence incident in 2016, and he was involuntarily committed for a mental health examination the year following. Basically, my thesis is that this shooter, whose name I don't use because I don't want to glorify him, is part of what I think of as the Republican Party's paramilitary wing. These are people who are reacting to liberal values and democratic politics, in that they believe liberal values and democratic politics are a threat to their way of life. I tend to think of these, and another piece in the editorial board, I describe him as one of what's called the chosen people. And I don't mean Jews. I mean what Thomas Jefferson called the chosen people, and that is what was at the time a white rural majority. People in small towns and small places, farmers and so on, who were considered the most authentic of Americans, the most American of Americans. And these are people who basically controlled the country all the way up until the Voting Rights Act of 1965. Which empowered everybody else to have a say in American democracy. And at that point, and I quote a historian here, these most authentic of Americans no longer were considered the most American American, and then they've been angry ever since. So I think this guy is one of those people, and he demonstrated that by massacring three black people.
And on the other side of the coin, not the actual shooter, but the conservative wing of this country, part of your thesis is that they benefit from these acts of violence in a counterintuitive way. Like we would think, oh, well, these guys like Ron DeSantis have been pushing guns and then people go and use these guns and act violently. We would think that somebody like a Ron DeSantis would have political blood on their hands, so to speak. But you had a different take. I think it was quite astute.
Well, he does have political blood on his hands. I don't think there's any doubt about
that. No, but you're saying that they actually are able to turn this into a positive for them in some way, which I hadn't really thought of. Why don't you expand?
Okay, so when we think about gun rights and gun control, we're thinking on an individual level, and the Republicans always make sure that our focus stays on an individual level so that they always seem to be standing up for the individual's right to bear arms, right? But if you pull back and think of the issue in a more societal level, there, according to one source, there has been 476 as of right now, mass shootings in this country since the beginning of this year. If you think about it, that's one really good way of keeping people scared and keeping people afraid, keeping them quiet even. There are in a lot of countries that, you know, Americans don't pay attention to other countries, but in some other countries, you have political parties that forge informal, indirect ties with basically that society's very worst people. You know, basically think of like criminal elements. And they do that in order to, they create these ties and create incentives for these very worst people to go and basically terrorize a much larger group of people, like basically it's middle class, such in order to get that larger group of people to think, well, they either need to play ball with the political party or they need to give up on politics altogether, right?
What countries are you thinking of?
I'm thinking of Jamaica, actually, is one country I've recently been to, where that is the apparently the dynamic. Now, I'm no expert in Jamaica. This is just something I was educated about when I got there. And you could say the Republican Party does something similar to this. Basically, like they make informal relations with vigilantes, with people who feel like everything has gone to hell, and the law and politics, and nobody can trust anybody anymore, and they need to take matters into their own hands. They need to take the law into their own hands. They need to seek justice on their own. You see what I'm saying?
Because the democratic system is broken. So just like going out and campaigning or doing door-to-door campaigning or just voting, that's not enough. You need to, and you see a lot of that rhetoric on television with Republican leaders talking about just little murmurings of civil war and having to take matters into our own hands, that kind of messaging.
Absolutely, taking things into your own hands. And, you know, these are the very worst people you can think of because they don't have any, they've either given up on society and generally or democracy generally, and they are willing to hurt people, right? And they're willing to hurt people for what they believe is a good cause, right? And it's a good, and the reason they even think it's a good cause is because the Republicans have established enough, have sent out enough lies and propaganda in order to rationalize the very worst behavior among these very worst people.
And let's turn to the race element of it. You write on the editorial board, the threat of mass death can establish a climate of fear and loathing that silences dissent among people who endure the greatest burdens placed on them by the orders of white power. If censorship can't be done legitimately, it can be by sanctioning otherwise illegitimate behavior. So you talk about this white power element in the same article that you mentioned how Ron DeSantis has kind of equated, he's not alone, but anti-woke really means anti-black.
Mm-hmm. Anti-woke means anti-black. I mean, that they've established that. Is that enough? And woke, by the way, remember where woke comes from. It's a reaction to the political gains that were made democratically in the wake of George Floyd's murder by a white police officer. That's where woke comes from, Right. And so what we're saying is the anti-woke is anti-George Floyd. You know, there it's really that. But, you know, because news tends to be disseminated in bits and pieces, we forget this larger context, you know. And the Republicans benefit from those bits and pieces, where normal people who have other things to do than pay attention to politics don't have the time to put all these pieces together, right? That's why you and I do what we do, in order to help people, normal people, figure things out. Anti-woke is anti-black, there's a reason I say in that same piece I recount the scene that happened a couple weekends ago, when DeSantis arrived at a candlelight vigil for those three black murder victims, and he went there and he basically did everything he could not to bring up the real cause for the murder, which is racism. He called the killer a scumbag and so on.
And guns. You can't also talk about guns being the problem with this shooting, which is absurd, but...
Right. He got booed, viciously booed. And what's important, I think, in that scene, the way I talk about it in my piece, is that the booing is democratic politics, right? That's democratic politics. That's people raising hell when they see something is wrong, right? But he, DeSantis, represents the opposite force, which I think is anti-political politics. It's getting people in a democracy to stop acting democratically. What his biggest goal, which he can never achieve, is getting all those people to shut up. He can't do that. They're never going to shut up. But anti-political politics is never going to stop either. The more people keep raising hell, the more other people want them to shut up. And this is a dynamic that we keep living with, and the sad outcome is that people die.
South wind, you picked her up in Jacksonville and left her cold and lonesome in the rain. South wind, Nashville left me choking in the smoke behind the train. And you go, ooh, she's gone again on the south wind.
This is Alex Wise on SeaChange Radio, and I'm speaking to John Storr. He's the founder of the editorial board. When you're talking about guns and gun ownership, I can't help but think about American exceptionalism. And the in-group is thinking that, yes, guns are dangerous in the home, but I'm an exception because I'm a good gun owner. That thought process is not that dissimilar from the thought process that you hear on the right talking about Donald Trump undergoing some kind of a witch hunt, because this should not happen in this country. We're exceptional. But that specialness of the in-group is such a dangerous one, and it has a real domino effect on our body politic.
Oh, yeah, sure.
And Democrats do it, too. It's like the greatest country on earth should not suffer this. We just always say that. It's pablum.
Yeah, it is pablum. So, I mean, what does that mean, that we're the best and so on? Take that farther and farther out. And what are we really saying? What we're saying is that God chose us, right? We don't need democratic politics. We don't need to argue with each other. We don't need to compromise. We don't need to bargain. We don't need to do anything like that. God is on our side, so therefore we can kill you. I mean, that's what that means. So if you take that all the way to the end, and that means that we as human beings are no longer human beings, and we don't need to operate on a human level. What we can do is access godly heights in order to vaporize the opposition. You know, that kind of rhetoric is dangerous, and it has led in history to very, very bad outcomes. I don't think we're going to ever, in the United States, we're ever going to, I mean, who knows? Nobody knows the future. But I don't see, you know, like a Holocaust level kind of thing. And I know that's often referred to But I think the more we refer to these Holocaust-level tragedies, I think the less we see what's actually going on, which is a slow-motion kind of guerrilla warfare that's going on. I mean, 476 mass shootings, you know, there's a root to that. And the root is that some people are having a problem and they believe that they can turn to a gun to solve their problems. They can turn to violence, right? And we have a society that enables that, right? We have a whole political organization that's one of their main tenets is that, you know, a man should has a right to defend himself against whatever evil. You just pick an evil out of the air and he has a right to defend himself. And so that's a very dangerous place to be. And I think, we're seeing it. Except that we don't see it. That's the problem. Is that we kind of have this make-believe level of thinking, where all this mass death that we're seeing isn't really happening, or it doesn't make us less exceptional. You know, it's like, actually we are less exceptional. I think our rhetoric would be much healthier if we dropped the whole idea of America being a special place, because we're not that different from other democracies. And we'd know this if we paid attention to other democracies, but, you know, Americans typically don't.
So another part of illiberal politics that's being played out on a daily basis, and we'll see it more and more running up to the 2024 election, is the role of abortion in this country. You would think that after the Democrats had a healthy midterm in 2022, that Republicans might shy away from abortion. But no, as you write, they're pivoting to birth control. They can't quit anti-abortion politics, in your words.
No, and they aren't really making that pivot either. I'll explain that. Once the Republican rhetoric started equating abortion with murder, there was no turning back. You're not going to. I mean, how do you turn back from that? I mean, and they went that far in order to put a fire under six right-wing Supreme Court justices and have them turn that whole thing around.
So is it a winning strategy to just constantly be the puritanical party that's trying to enforce, you know, 17th century values on a 21st century world?
Well, I do not pretend to foresee the future. So is it a winning strategy? I don't know. I don't think so. I can't imagine that most people most of the time are going to get behind that kind of thing, especially in a presidential election, you know, where majorities matter. Even in Senate races, I think, you know, the Republicans are going to have a hard time. We know that they are going to have a hard time because they're running away from it, or at least they're trying to have things both ways. On the one, they're speaking out of both sides of their mouths. In other words, on the one side, they're speaking to their people and they're like, no, don't worry, we're still anti-abortion. No worries. And then on the other side, they're like, no, we're not that much anti-abortion. We're actually pro birth control. Or it's either that, or they're saying, never mind the anti-abortion politics, pay more attention to the transphobia and those scary people who want kids to have sex changes and the groomers and the pedophiles. Pay attention to that. You know, they're either fear-mongering or softballing in order to distract from where they are, which is anti-abortion politics. The problem with anti-abortion politics is that it's unpopular. Really, you know, the only reason that we are in the place that we are is because the Supreme Court stepped into Democratic politics and made a decision, right? Otherwise, if we were just doing normal campaigning and legislation, anti-abortion politics would just not win, because most people most of the time, even if they hate abortion, they still want it to be legal, right? In some form. I mean, that's how Americans have a complicated opinion of abortion. They don't want it to go away, but they want it to be reasonable. And where reasonable is where the contention lies.
I couldn't help but think that the new moderate position staked out by the Republicans was expounded upon by Nikki Haley in the GOP debate, where she was saying, like, we shouldn't be executing women who get abortions. Like, and that was like, wow, okay, she's pretty moderate. Like, this is like the new middle ground. Sorry, go on.
Right. All right, so why are we even talking about quote-unquote pivot to birth control? It's because there are some vulnerable House Republicans, they represent swing districts, who are nervous about anti-abortion politics. They're nervous because anti-abortion politics is unpopular, and Democrats are mobilized. So what are they doing? They have introduced back in July legislation that quote unquote would expand access to birth control. It really wouldn't do any such thing if you read the language of the legislation, but they're creating the appearance of pivoting to birth control because that is in line with what they've been saying for a while, which is that, you know, if you don't want to have an abortion, don't get pregnant. And what's one way of not getting pregnant is by using birth control, etc. I have a piece in the editorial board that basically breaks down like all the problems with that, the most important one is that Republicans themselves have equated birth control with abortion. They have made the argument that that's the same thing. And in fact, that argument has been so influential that it determined a Supreme Court ruling a few years ago in favor of private companies that didn't want to pay for birth control in their health insurance programs because they believed it was the same thing as abortion. So they're really in this damned if they do, damned if they don't situation, but they're trying to create the appearance of not being damned if they do and damned if they don't. How that will play out is, you know, I don't know. The 2024, I would expect that it's going to be hell for them in 2024 because there are just so many angry Democrats and who are doing everything they can to unseat these folk. But there's also, you know, just more that now that abortion is not a federal right, people are upset about it. When Roe was law, it was easy to be an anti-abortion Republican because you never really expected Roe to go away. So you could just keep poking the bear, but the bear was never going to go away, right? Well, the bear's gone now.
And it also led to complacency on the left, where we say, well, they're not going to take it away.
They're not going to take it away. They don't really mean what they say. There are all kinds of ways of rationalizing away what they really intended to do, right? But now that Roe is gone, now people are like, wait a minute, we've just had 50 years in which we took the right to an abortion for granted, and now that those 50 years are gone, that's not acceptable. So that's why you're seeing polls now that even in states, even in states where abortion is largely banned or banned altogether, you have an increase in support in abortion rights, you know, because people didn't really expect any of this to happen until it happened. I call it the great reversal.
Mama, she had complications. There's nothing very strange about that. None said, we can't kill that baby. We'll have to let your mother die.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio, and I'm speaking to John Storr. He's the founder and the editor of the editorial board. So, John, we've gone almost this entire conversation without talking about Donald Trump's legal woes, and I don't want to get into the legal angles of all the different cases, but if you spent an hour or two watching cable news, you would think that's the only news in the world, is that there's a possibility of Donald Trump going to prison. Without breaking down each case, what's your big takeaway from that?
What does it mean when more and more of these prosecutors step forward? It means this man has less and less political power, right? They smelled blood and they went after him, right? So the more he's accused of crimes, the less support he seems to be getting. And the more Republican voters seem to be looking for options. His life depends on winning this presidential campaign. You know, really. His whole life depends on winning this presidential campaign. And the thing about that is that that's a really bad presidential campaign. I mean,
vote for me or I'll go to jail.
Yeah, vote for me or I'll go to jail. I mean, maybe I'm being naive in saying this, but I just think most people, most of the time, and I'm talking about like respectable, property owning, law abiding people, middle class people, they're not going to want to hear about, constantly hear about the 2020 election, or constantly hear about his stealing of government secrets and stuff. They're going to start tuning all that out because they have concerns of their own that they want elected officials to take care of, right? I mean, Trump basically is saying, he's running basically a campaign of revenge, right? Saying, vote for me and I'll obliterate the enemy.
But he's also saying he'd obliterate democracy, which is, it's so much more overt than it was in 2016 when he was running. I think the downside is so much more terrifying to clear-eyed people. That's one of the reasons why we're so obsessed with seeing him being prosecuted, is that there's this hope that they can keep him off the ballot. But I don't think that's realistic. I think it's just going to be our own pound of flesh that we get to extract from this terrible man if he does go to prison for his misdeeds. I think it'll be gravy after he loses the election, without jinxing anything there.
I'll knock on some wood for you. So, but, you know, I'm my opinion, this opinion of mine is not mine alone, and that this is really going, this is a political problem that has to be solved politically, and the law enforcement is not going to save us. You know, he could go to prison and still run for president. I mean, he could.
And he'll get millions of votes from prison.
Yeah, it's still going to be a problem, and that's still going to be a political problem that has to be solved politically. There's no way around that. I see a lot of Democrats doing these days with Jack Smith and Fannie Willis and Alvin Bragg up in Manhattan. I see them doing what they did with
Mueller.
The Mueller report, yeah. The whole, like, Mueller's going to save us. Mueller's never saved us. You know, what saved us was normal, partisan, Democratic politics. That's what saved us. You know, and it's going to save us again. Just the struggle, the work, put in the struggle, do what needs to be done and hope for the best. I mean, that's not to say that damage won't be done. Lots of damage is going to be done. We're already seeing it. Jacksonville was an instance of damage being done. That guy was, as I said, he was one of the chosen, and the chosen is exactly the Trump's people. America is their birthright. They have a right to boss everybody else around, and anybody else who complains about it only deserves annihilation. And I think most people, most of the time, are just tired of that.
John Storr is the editor of the editorial board. People can go to editorialboard.com and subscribe. John, thanks so much for being my guest on Sea Change Radio.
Thank you, Alex.
Sway the future to the past and find what will endure.
You've been listening to Sea Change Radio. Our intro music is by Sanford Lewis, and our outro music is by Alex Wise. Additional music by Herbie Hancock, Johnny Cash, and David Byrne. To read a transcript of this show, go to seachangeradio.com. Stream or download the show or subscribe to our podcast on our site or visit our archives to hear from Doris Kearns Goodwin, Gavin Newsom, Stuart Brand, and many others. And tune in to Sea Change Radio next week, as we continue making connections for sustainability. For Sea Change Radio, I'm Alex Wise.